one of the concerns that people have raised is that these systems might get it wrong. I think anyone that's interacted with a computer knows that they make mistakes. And these could have very severe life and death consequences.
Welcome to Global Dispatches, a podcast for the foreign policy and global development communities and anyone who wants a deeper understanding of what is driving events in the world today. I'm your host, Mark Leon Goldberg. I am a veteran international affairs journalist and the editor of UN Dispatch. Enjoy the show. Looking for a trustworthy podcast to bring you unfiltered viewpoints and experiences on global health? Tune into Global Health Matters, the podcast that connects silos and amplifies diverse voices to give you a holistic picture. Each month, Dr. Gary Aslanian from the World Health Organization hosts discussions with guests spanning former ministers of health, award-winning journalists and authors, and frontline public health workers. Join listeners from across 180 countries for an exciting season 4, launching in June. Global Health Matters is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Artificial intelligence is changing warfare. Fully autonomous weapons that can make its own decision about what to target or who to kill are already in limited use today. But the pace of development of AI suggests that the so-called killer robots may become more and more common in future armed conflict. Meanwhile, the speed at which new AI technology is coming online is far exceeding the ability of the international community to come up with guardrails that might place controls on fully autonomous weapon systems. My guest today, Paul Shari, is the Executive Vice President and Director of Studies at the Center for New American Security. He is the award-winning author of Four Battlegrounds, Power in the Age of Artificial Intelligence. We kick off discussing what we mean by autonomous weapons before having a longer discussion about what the future holds for AI in warfare, for nuclear security, and how to secure sensible regulations on autonomous weapons and the military uses of artificial intelligence. Paul Shari recently wrote a piece in Foreign Affairs titled The Perilous Coming of Age of AI Warfare that inspired this episode. I'll post a link to that in the show notes. Now here is my conversation with Paul Shari of the Center for New American Security. So, Paul, I know you are coming to me right after having left Capitol Hill, where you delivered testimony on presumably a lot of the kind of issues that we're going to talk about today. What was your testimony? Can you set the scene a little bit for us about your just moments ago testimony on Capitol Hill?
Sure, absolutely. I was just talking with the Senate Armed Services Committee about the trends that we're seeing in technology and what it means for the security of the United States and its allies. There's quite a bit of concern in Washington about threats that we're seeing around the world, certainly the war in Ukraine, the conflict between Israel and Hamas, and then the specter of potentially Chinese military aggression against Taiwan or others in the Indo-Pacific region. And then kind of layered on top of that, you have all of these dramatic technological changes that I think we actually all experience in our own lives, but also have huge implications from a national security standpoint, whether that's for the military as they're looking to adopt new technology. We certainly see new technologies like drones playing a role in the war in Ukraine, or other ways that technology affects security, like cybersecurity or disinformation.
And one of those particular technological developments you discussed in a recent Foreign Affairs piece was the advent of fully autonomous weapons. Can you just describe and explain what do we mean by fully autonomous weapons? What are we talking about here?
In broad strokes, what we really mean is a machine that's making its own decisions on the battlefield about whom to kill. and this question of handing life and death decisions over to machines. So one way to think about it might be, what happens when a predator drone has as much autonomy as a self-driving car? And how much autonomy are we comfortable with? Now, the reality, and this is where maybe your phrase fully autonomous is really important here, is that militaries already have a lot of automation in weapon systems. So they're not starting from a completely manual point of view. There are lots of different ways in which militaries use automation today. In fact, at least 30 countries around the world today have automated air and missile defense systems or active protection systems for ground vehicles to defend against rockets and missiles and mortars.
So in other words, if there's like a missile incoming, an automated system that does not rely on a human to push a button will just like automatically shoot that out of the air.
Exactly. And that's widespread today. Again, over 30 countries have that. And that's been around for decades, dating back to the 1980s. Because there are times when the incoming speed of that missile or that, say, rocket-propelled grenade against the tank is just way too fast for a human to respond. And so you need that split-second decision-making. That's a pretty narrowly constrained slice of warfare in which automation is being used, but we're starting to see it being used in wider degrees over time.
And that includes the example of, say, like a drone whose only maybe human interaction is the human programs the drone, but the drone makes its own decision on what to kill. Is that kind of technology being used anywhere in the world right now?
So we're increasingly seeing AI embedded into drones that are being operated in Ukraine, AI-based image classifiers that are used to identify objects, to identify that's a tank, that's an armored personnel carrier, for example. And there have been some reports more recently of AI being used to power autonomous drones for the final maneuvering to the target. So a human selects the target and presses a button and says, okay, attack that tank. But because there is jamming being used out on the battlefield to jam the drone's communication links, there's some ability in a few drones, I don't think this is widespread today, for the drone itself to then maneuver in that terminal engagement. And there's been at least one report about a Ukrainian company, Saker, that claims that they have a fully autonomous drone. Now, that's not been independently verified, but they have claimed that their Saker Scout is capable of fully autonomous operation and that it has been used in combat.
And presumably, like you intimated this earlier, like the military advantage of that is that you take the human operator out of the loop. And so it can avoid like the communications jamming between the human operator at a base and the drone in the field. If the drone is just programmed on the base, you know, search and destroy, it'll do that. And the jamming won't impact its ability to search and destroy.
That's exactly right. So there are clear military advantages here. So by taking a person out of the drone, you remove the physical limitations of the human. And so you can have drones that are smaller, for example, like small quadcopters, than you could have with a person if the person had to be on board the vehicle. The drones could be kamikaze drones as they're used in Ukraine without putting a person at risk. But when the human's still piloting the drone, the human's still very cognitively engaged. And that obviously has a tremendous amount of benefits. Humans bring a lot to the battlefield in terms of understanding what's happening and situational awareness and decision-making. But it's also a weak link when the drone relies on that communication. So if you can go after that communications link and jam it, right now, if the drone's remotely piloted, it's done for. And so that creates some incentives for more autonomy.
So if current trends continue and there's no real regulation on the use or development of autonomous weapons, what does the pace of development in artificial intelligence today suggest about what these weapons may look like in the next, say, few years to a decade from now?
On the current trajectory, it seems likely that we'll be entering what I might think of as a gray zone, where we will continue to see increasing reports about autonomous weapons being used in conflicts. And we've had maybe one questionable report now. There have been some other reports in the past, in the last few years, that I think have not been super credible. But I think they'll get increasingly credible. But it may not be so clear that there's a single moment where we all go, aha, that was an autonomous weapon used. Possibly. But one of the challenges with autonomous weapons is the degree of autonomy is embedded in the software. It's not something that you can physically see. So even if a drone is used, you could see that the drone was used, but was a person controlling it? We may not know. And so I think we're likely to be in a period of time where there is a lot of uncertainty, about whether autonomous weapons actually have been used, which I think is going to be challenging from sort of a policy and regulatory standpoint. But the broad arc is likely to be more uses of more autonomy over time.
Maybe just to dig like a little deeper into that, can you just kind of make this real for listeners who, again, might have a hard time like wrapping their brains around like what a battlefield use of AI drones 10 years from now might look like? And also like why that might be a problem. I mean, AI, it's super intelligent, right? It should be able to distinguish combatant from non-combatant.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the near term, the uses will be probably isolated and the effects on the battlefield will probably not be massive. There is this sort of time disconnect between what's happening out in the civilian space with AI and militaries, because it just takes militaries a while to adopt the technology. In the longer run, I think the odds are good that artificial intelligence and autonomy will transform the battlefield in very profound ways. That may take some time, 10, 15 years, maybe several decades, but one could certainly envision a future where there are lots of weapons that are operating autonomously, that are searching and attacking targets on their own. They're still built by humans and designed by humans and launched by humans, but once set out into the battlefield, they have quite a degree of freedom that they don't have today and have some measure of ability to operate intelligently. One of the concerns that people have raised is that these systems might get it wrong. I think anyone that's interacted with a computer knows that they make mistakes, and these could have very severe life and death consequences. Another concern is that this leads to a sort of slippery slope towards militaries maybe being more liberal or less concerned about civilian casualties and civilian harm. And you could have situations where militaries sort of delegate that to the autonomy and say, well, the algorithm is handling that, but the consequences for civilian harm could be quite severe and we could see a lot of civilian casualties.
So in 2022, the United States declared that it would always retain a human in the loop, quote unquote, for decisions to use nuclear weapons. I know the UK adopted a similar policy as well. Russia and China have not. Can you just explain the dangers of combining sort of artificial intelligence and autonomy with the use of nuclear weapons? I mean, it seems sort of obvious, but what are the scenarios that security experts like yourselves are particularly concerned about?
The risks do seem obvious. I think there's been maybe more than one science fiction movie about sort of the risks of plugging AI into nuclear weapons. So I think it's notable that the US and UK have made this statement. I guess a couple of things are worth pointing out. One is that it's not actually the case that there's sort of no use of AI or autonomy or automation in nuclear operations. In fact, this is another area where various forms of automation have been used for decades, dating back to the Cold War. But humans are very firmly in control of nuclear launch decisions. As we see more AI being adopted, I think the value here is just having a clear and unambiguous statement that humans will always be in control of any decisions relating to nuclear use. So what are the real risks here? I don't think it's that someone plugs, you know, ChatGPT into a nuclear weapon. No one's proposing that. But we have seen, for example, Russia and before them the Soviet Union design and build systems that I think would have a degree of automation and risk that many in the US and other defense circles might be quite uncomfortable with. One is the perimeter system that the Soviets built, which Russian defense officials have said is still operational today. That's a semi-automated, quote, dead hand system. So there's still a human in the loop, but the way that it's designed to work is that once activated, if there were a first strike that wiped out Soviet leadership, this automated system would have mechanisms to automatically detect that and then pass launch authority to a relatively junior officer sitting at a bunker. And, you know, there's still a person there, but that is certainly risky. And I think concerning when you think about nuclear stability to have those kinds of automated procedures in place. And then there's more recently a uncrewed undersea vehicle, a robotic undersea vehicle that Russia is building called Poseidon or Status 6 that is reportedly nuclear armed, nuclear powered actually, a nuclear reactor, and would be designed to carry out a nuclear strike. Again, I don't think the risk here is that the, you know, robot would decide one day to sort of put itself to sea, but that you could imagine robotic systems or drones that have nuclear weapons on board them that get lost, that go astray, and that escalate attention or even lose a nuclear weapon, and all of which would be very troubling.
So what would be some sensible regulations that would limit, if not prohibit, fully autonomous weapons?
Well, I think one of the challenges right now is a lot of the debate internationally, and countries have been coming together since 2014 through the UN Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons, the CCW, has been sort of painted in this kind of black or white distinction of either we could have a preemptive, legally binding treaty that bans autonomous weapons, or we have nothing. And we just sort of proceed where we are today, which is we have the law of war and they would apply to autonomous weapons, but nothing specific that's different. And I think that both of those are options. There's, I think, downsides to doing nothing. And I don't think politically really that a comprehensive preemptive ban on autonomous weapons is likely, given where we are with the technology in the international sphere. So I think there's a couple different regulatory approaches that are also worth being considered. One would be a sort of broad principle in international law about the role of human decision-making. We never had this before. You never needed it. But that's not a bad idea to have a broad principle, like we have principles of proportionality and distinction, to set a broad concept of what the role is that humans are needed in the use of force. I think there could be rooms for a more narrowly targeted ban on anti-personnel autonomous weapons that would target people. Those have some unique challenges. Certainly on the nuclear side, I think that's another area where some unique rules might make sense that are specific to nuclear weapons. Nuclear powers agreeing to have a human in the loop. I think some steps on improving reliability of AI-enabled systems through better test and evaluation would be useful to make sure that we reduce the amount of accidents or the risk of accidents. And then, you know, it might be worth countries considering a kind of rules of the road for how drones operate in contested areas as they have increasing amounts of autonomy to avoid potentially damaging incidents where we might see air or maritime drones interacting with one another and causing potentially dangerous and unwanted incidents.
Like an autonomous American drone confronting an autonomous Russian drone and that somehow escalating.
Right, exactly. Or even a drone encountering a crewed vessel somewhere else from a potentially competitor nation, and the autonomy takes some action, right? It does whatever it was programmed to do, which might have seemed like a good idea at the time it was programmed. But one of the really important distinctions between what machines can do and humans is machines just don't have the ability to see the bigger picture, to understand the broader context. So you can give a human direction like, hey, listen, you always have the right to defend yourself, but don't start a war. You could tell a human that, and they may not know exactly what that means in an instant ahead of time, but they can take that sort of broad guidance of, okay, this is the broader context I'm in. We don't want to escalate things if we don't need to, and they can use their best judgment in some of these tricky environments that we see militaries operate in contested areas in the Middle East and the Black Sea and the South China Sea and elsewhere. And you can't tell that to a machine. It's just going to do whatever it was programmed to do. And that might not be what you wanted in the moment.
So there is a campaign to stop killer robots that has been, you know, broadly embraced by the NGO community, by the human rights community, by certain elements of the United Nations, including, I believe, the Secretary General himself. But I take it that you see the political viability of an outright ban on autonomous weapons to be like a difficult hill to climb, considering just the pace of development today.
That's right. And I think that the campaign has done a great job of putting this issue on the agenda for policymakers and helping to drive the discussion and raising concerns about particularly civilian harm and some of the humanitarian risks of autonomous weapons. But I just think realistically that we're all going to be better off if we sort of widen the aperture of potential regulatory approaches and put more options on the table and explore what's in the art of the doable here. Because I think you get this combination of the technologies moving forward very, very quickly. And if you look at the international environment right now, I mean, there's a war raging in Europe. Russia invaded another country. And so getting to a place where you think, okay, we're going to have viable arms control that are going to include the great major military powers at the time, include Russia, for example, just seems maybe not super realistic. And particularly given in this current security environment, when a lot of countries are rethinking their security posture and the specter of interstate warfare seems much more real than it has at any point in time since the end of the Cold War. Certainly it is happening today in Europe. You know, to ask countries to effectively unilaterally disarm if they don't see competitors taking those same steps, that's what you're asking for. I just don't think it's very realistic.
Well, so then how do we get to your endpoint that you articulated earlier of like sensible regulation? Is there like a mechanism by which, say, the United States and Russia and China could come together, given this kind of fractious geopolitical environment, to agree on some guardrails for the use of AI in military operations?
Well, there are several mechanisms, and I actually think that the U.S. and other countries should push diplomatically on all of them, and we should have a sort of multifaceted approach here. The Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons, the CCW, is one forum where countries have been coming together to talk about this issue.
And this is, I should say, already like a United Nations platform. So there are already like rules of the road and ways that competing countries could kind of productively engage with each other, in theory at least.
That's right. And I think the CCW is in many ways a great vehicle because it includes military experts. It gives NGOs a seat at the table. They participate in the conversation. One of the challenges is it's a consensus-based organization. And so that does make it challenging to get things done. But I do think that that's a forum that we should continue to see discussions on autonomous weapons. There is more recently was a vote out of the UN First Committee in the fall, and that moving through the First Committee in the General Assembly could be another process to have discussions on autonomous weapons. I think the permanent members of the UN Security Council, the P5, certainly for nuclear weapons, that would be an appropriate vehicle for the P5 to come together to talk about concerns about nuclear technology. And then there are bilateral opportunities for countries to address these issues. So the US and China are now getting underway on bilateral talks on artificial intelligence. And I think that this is a topic that should be on the agenda. It's not the only issue that they have to discuss on AI, but I think it should be one of them.
Are there any kind of key inflection points, either in terms of like the technological developments of autonomous weapons or opportunities to put guardrails on the military use of artificial intelligence that you're looking towards in the coming year, say? Any key moments?
I mean, I do think there is a phenomenon which those who've been advocating for a ban have, I think, rightly highlighted, which is it can be often challenging to get weapons out of military's hands once they've already been integrated into their forces.
Yeah, like we still don't have like the U.S. abided by a landmine treaty or a cluster bombs treaty. You know, it's the same kind of idea, I would imagine.
Right. So I think, you know, once militaries have sort of invested in a technology and it's part of how they envision their forces operating, it can be more challenging. Now, preemptive bans have their own unique challenges too that are different if a weapon hasn't been invented yet. But I think you certainly in major inflection point would be if we got to the point where militaries had significant investments in autonomous weapons, they've been integrated into their forces. I think that would really change the game considerably in terms of the space of options politically available and would probably make it harder to then regulate the technology.
Is there any final point you want to make, any kind of question I didn't ask or point you wanted to emphasize?
I guess maybe one point that's also worth thinking about and one that I'm concerned about quite a bit is autonomous weapons are just one aspect of militarized artificial intelligence. And there are lots of ways that AI could be used by militaries or even weaponized in various ways. And I think that it's important for countries to come together to regulate autonomous weapons, not just for the harm that they themselves could potentially pose, but also to begin to put in some of the precedents, the institutional framework, for countries to come together to regulate AI in the military space more broadly, because there are potentially even more dangerous forms of militarized AI that are coming, the use of AI models to enable cyber weapons or chemical and biological attacks. And those aren't as mature as some of the developments we're seeing with autonomy and weapons, but they're likely coming. And that's where a place where the proliferation risks, in particular, to say non-state actors, are quite severe. And so, you know, I think we're entering a period where the technology is going to enable quite dangerous things. And it's imperative for countries to come together to find sensible ways to avoid some of the most grave dangers.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Global Dispatches. The show is produced by me, Mark Leon Goldberg. It is edited and mixed by Levi Sharp. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure to follow the show and enable automatic downloads to get new episodes as soon as they're released. On Spotify, tap the bell icon to get a notification when we publish new episodes. And of course, please visit globaldispatches.org to get on our free mailing list, get in touch with me, and access our full archive. Thank you.